Hear the word of the Lord. Moses said to the Israelites, "Whom has he led out of slavery in Egypt and through the wilderness for 40 years into the promised land? Be careful to follow every command I am giving you today, so that you may live and increase, and that you may enter and possess the land that the Lord promised on oath to your forefathers. Remember how the Lord your God led you all the way in the desert these 40 years, to humble you and to test you in order to know what was in your heart, whether or not you would keep his commands. He humbled you by causing you to hunger and then feeding you with manna, which neither you nor your fathers had known, to teach you that man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord." Deuteronomy 8, 1 through 5. Jesus was led by the Spirit into the desert to be tempted by the devil. After fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. The tempter came to him and said, "Since you are the Son of God, tell these stones to become bread." Jesus answered, "It is written, man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God." Matthew 4, 4.
Good morning and welcome to the national TV talk show, Religion on the Line. Broadcasting live from Oklahoma City Community Church in Oklahoma City, we also welcome our radio audience. And now, let us welcome the host of Religion on the Line, Jack Preacher!
Well, we have a great show for you today from Religion on the Line, and probably it's a topic that a lot of you are interested in, the conflict of science and religion. How many are interested in that topic? Oh, great. Everybody. That's great. You know, it's important to know something about science, isn't it? You know, I read this joke about this guy went down the street and he asked somebody on the street, he said, "You know, why in the morning is there dew on the planets?" And the answer was, "Well, the sun gets up and makes them perspire." And then there was another question asked somebody on the street, but this only asked to a teenager. It was, "What do you think is better, the moon or the sun?" And the answer was, "Well, I think the moon is better because at night you need light, but during the day you don't need the sun because you have light." So, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about science today and the benefits of science. And we all want to recognize that science has an important part of all of our lives. I mean, look at all this equipment up here that's scientifically based. You know, my eyeglasses are scientifically based. And I'm sure you enjoy the benefits of science yourself. But we're not going to forget about a religion either. We're going to talk about that a little bit. We have a special guest on our show today. But first, you know, I was looking in the local paper out here in California. My wife sent this to me. We're in Oklahoma City today, but we may get back to California. Unknown angel slips away after saving life. Did you see that? I don't know. On the national news, I don't know if it made it out here to Oklahoma City. But this man drove his family to the church in San Fernando Valley. He dropped them off, and he went to park his car, and he had a heart attack in the parking lot. And nobody knew that he had a heart attack. But there was this passerby. This man saw him, jumped out, administered CPR, and the paramedics who finally came said he almost broke the guy's ribs. But he saved the guy's life. And then the guy disappeared. They had no idea who this Good Samaritan was. So we're going to talk about, you know, what is the motivation for a person to do something like that? You know, does it come from science or does it come from religion? We're going to talk about some of those things. And we want to welcome today a wonderful guest. He just published a book on the conflict of science and religion. Sir Arthur Einstein, come up and join us. Welcome. Many of you have read Sir Arthur's previous books. He just came up with a new book. There we have a picture of it on the screen there. It's a very interesting title, Sir Arthur. Science, the Salvation of Humankind, and the Myth of Religion. Well, you've got quite something in that book, I know, for all of us to share with us. And you're from Cambridge University, right, in England?
Yeah.
And you've been a scientist for, what, 50 years now?
Yes, at least.
At least, yeah. Well, I know you brought your slide rule with you, so I know it's at least 50
really
years
goes,
old.
Really goes back.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe give a little summary of what's in this new book that you've just published.
Well, you know, this latest book that I published this year, I'm very pleased with it. It has a widespread acceptance, and it really humbles me.
Uh-huh, yeah. Well, give us an idea, maybe, you know, what's the substance of your book? You know, everybody's interested in this conflict that you've mentioned on the title.
Well, I'm saying that science created many, many benefits of the society to improve conditions and quality of life. It has also created an enormous amount of facts about life and the universe. I also look at religion from a perspective of science and show that religion has caused all sorts of havoc, wars, dissension, chaos in the world, and I've also argued some science proves that religion proves that science is a myth.
Oh, don't you mean religion is a myth? That's your title?
Religion is a myth, yes.
Yeah. Well, we'll get that
I don't know how to read yet. And in the modern world, people ought to throw off myths of the past and the non-scientific ages.
Oh, well, that's a challenging position. I'm sure you're friends with Richard Dawkins. I know this is his book. We have it up there, The God Delusion, that was published in 2006, a New York Times bestseller. You're friends with Dawkins?
Yeah, he's a friend of mine, and we're on the same page as far as science and religion are concerned. I thought I would update the conclusions with new scientific evidence that has come about.
No, I think that's really good to have you update this for us, but I'm sure you know that there are sectors of society right here in America that would take great umbrage at what you're stating and just say plainly you're dead wrong. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, science sent men to the moon, but religion sent two airplanes to the World Trade Centers in 2001.
Yeah, I know. That was a real tragedy. But you think, don't you need to ask how people use religion instead of just throwing the baby out with the bathwater?
Yes. The evidence is in.
Well, let me ask you, too. You know, you're a scientist who doesn't believe there is a God, but there are scientists around the world who do, aren't there? What do you think about them?
They should read my book, too.
Oh, well. Well, we'll get it. We'll get it. We'll see if anybody writes into the show and send them a copy of your book. You know, I'd like to think about some of the benefits of science. You've been around for 50 years, and one of the benefits is you think about the Pony Express back in 1860 in the Wild West here. And then, you know, today, what do we have? We have the cell phones. You know, Pony Express only went from station to station. They had to trade a horse in that was all tired out and get a new one. But cell phone, they never tire out. You just plug them in and recharge them.
If you remember.
If you remember, yeah, that's right. Yeah. I guess you're at the age where that's you have to leave a little note for yourself. Well, and then I was thinking about the Wright brothers. You know, that was only in 1903 that they started. It seems like yesterday. Yeah, and then in 1976. The supersonic Concorde was flying. Can you believe that much advancement in science in just 73 years? I mean, rather incredible. And then I saw this picture on, you probably saw it too, on National Geographic. How many saw this picture on National Geographic? Yeah. One, two, three. Oh, you don't read National Geographic? No. Well, that's a great scientific magazine if you don't. And here's the baby there. They were saying, what do you think about this? They say that baby is going to live to be 120.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that in another 100 years, the science will advance so that life is worthwhile to live to 120.
Yeah, and we found another picture that might illustrate how life will be at 120. Yeah, my staff worked on that, you know. And yeah, another 100 years, with the past 100 years advancement in science, we had incredible things happen in the future. Well, we want to focus on your conclusion that religion is a myth. It's caused a lot of dissension, a lot of discussion, in fact, a lot of name-calling from one side to the other. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I'm quite sure that there are groups around the country who think that the Earth is only 6,000 years old and the dinosaurs missed getting on the Ark. But obviously, they themselves are enjoying the benefits of science and calling science something from the gates of hell.
Well, you know, that may be unfortunate, and that's why we're here today. We're welcoming you. We're going to have some kind of a civil discussion about some of these issues instead of just name-calling, and we're glad all of you have joined us for that. You mentioned in your book that this argument between religion and science may go back about 500 years. You know, tell us something about that.
Well, it goes back at least that far, and you know, but basically it started in modern and Renaissance Europe. Most scientists who studied the planets and the stars, as well as the Roman Church, believed that the Earth was not the center of the cosmos. Let's see.
Well, I think we have a picture here from taken right out of your book of an illustration that shows the Earth is the center, and that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, here, a diagram of the new theory, the sun is the center. But the Roman Church and even new Protestants like Martin Luther lambasted the theory. They quoted verses from the Bible to prove their point that the Earth was the center and unmovable and stable, fixed. Obviously, as we now know, they interpreted these verses improperly. Yet, what has been the accepted understanding of the time, both by scientists and the Christian Church?
Wow, that was quite a conflict back then. And who were the theorists who were proposing this new theory that the sun was the center?
Well, there was Nicholas Copernicus in Poland in the 1500s. And Galileo Galilei in Italy in the 1600s. The Roman Church was so upset with them and their new scientific theory that the Church banned Copernicus' books in 1543 and declared Galileo heretic in 1633. Galileo was put under house arrest and he died in 1642.
Oh, well, that's maybe unfortunate in looking backwards, but that seems that religion won the day back then. What happened since then?
Oh, not so. The truth of science finally trumped the myth of religious belief. The Roman Church finally took Galileo's books off the banned list in 1835 and reinstated Galileo in 1972. It takes a long time for religion to adjust to change.
Well, I guess we all know that from our own experience. You know, it takes each of us a long time to adjust to different beliefs, doesn't it? And I think that was under Pope John Paul II that, right, that Galileo was reinstated, no longer a heretic. And
yeah,
they finally gave in and accepted this new theory. And even today, we've got arguments. Like you mentioned, 500 years ago, here's a Time magazine just in 2006. In fact, this was when Dawkins published his book, and they had a debate in the Time magazine in November of 2006.
Mr. Preacher, I will. This proves that my book about religious myth will go on for a long time. They're very hard to change.
Yeah, and it's good to think about the scientific side and appreciate your points of view on the science of this. But I want to talk, too, about the religious side of this debate. And are you willing to kind of move on to the religious side?
Yeah, I welcome all ideas, and I'm sure that they can be explained through further studies of DNA and human evolution and that sort of thing.
Well, there are some things I call the aromas of life that I think we'd like to kind of go on to. This gives a list. My staff put this together, and I wanted to take a look at this with you because I think some of these things can't be put quite into a scientific box. It's like walking into your grandmother's kitchen. Maybe you remember experiences like smelling the aromas of her cooking and, you know, things like beauty and joy. How can you define those things scientifically?
Well, joy is not something of science, but livability we can study.
Well, here's something else about awe. I mean, everybody knows pictures of sunrises and sunsets. We see them ourselves, and I'm always struck with the beauty and the wonder and the awe of it. And here's another picture. You're probably more familiar with this, the Hubble Space Telescope.
Yes, scientists are in awe of the discoveries of the Hubble Space Telescope. The photos themselves are awe-inspiring.
Yeah, and I'm sure the scientists want to explore, you know, what the reality is behind these wonderful photos. But there's something almost spiritual, I think, Sir Arthur, about, you know, the awe and the wonder of the creation around us.
Well, look, I'm not a philosopher. I haven't touched on awe as a subject. It's too subjective to treat as a scientific fact.
Well, that may be so, but we'll touch on more of these subjects in the next part of our program. And now we want to hear a word from our sponsor.
You have a chicken in every pot, and now we can have a Bible in every home. Hi, Billy Mays here with Bibles for You. Call today to get your free Bibles in your home. Just remember, call 1-800-BIBLES-FOR-YOU. That is all.
Also my book.
Well, we'll get back to your book, Sir Arthur. Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Billy Mays, too. And we have several guests to come on our show now who are going to kind of dialogue with us. And I want to welcome Susan Fletcher, who's an expert and works with youth and teenagers, particularly troublesome group about values and those sort of things. So Susan will come up here. And Susan and I met because we talked about all the different trips you've done and planned with youth, right?
Yes, that's right, Jack. I've had the privilege over the past several years of working with the youth committee for our church. And we serve the high school and the junior high kids. One of the big responsibilities that we have as a committee is planning the mission trip every year that our high school kids go on.
Is that like sending the rover on a mission trip to Mars?
No, it's more of a spiritual mission and sharing the love and the word of Jesus Christ to different people all around the world.
Well, hey, just a minute, Susan. I wanted to make sure you met Sir Arthur Einstein, our esteemed scientist guest on our program tonight. And we would just like to have this interaction, discussion about science versus religion. And so that's why we wanted you to come on the show and tell us something about your point of view.
That's great. Well, yeah. One of the things that occurs to me that we try to get across to the kids in the youth committee is the concept of sacrifice and putting others' needs above your own. This is a picture here of, the last slide was a picture that was taken from our mission trip in 2011. We went to San Antonio, took a group of high school kids there, and worked with a variety of service organizations to work with underprivileged and needy people in various different urban settings throughout San Antonio. The kids really learned what it was to sacrifice by giving up their week of their spring break. They give up their full week to serve the needs of others there.
Yeah, and I see the next slide is a recent program you went on. The kids went on to Dominican Republic?
Yes. This map shows where they served in the DR in a tiny little remote village up in the mountains of the Dominican Republic, a town called Polo. It must have been hard getting there.
You said it's remote.
I think it was like a four-hour bus drive after a very long day of flight to get to the actual town.
Were they ever afraid that the bus was going to fall off the road?
No, I don't think they were worried about that, but there were a couple of times where they thought that the ruts in the road were a little big, wondered if they were going to get over that, but they managed. They certainly did learn a lot about sacrifice that week, though. They lived exactly as the people in Polo live. They gave up all their creature comforts, and they lived as the village in Polo, very simply and in great poverty.
Now, I see here there's a slide where they're just playing and building relationships. Did they find that rewarding?
I love that photo. This shows a perfect example of what the mission trip is like for these kids. This is the village kids, the volunteers that went. They are all they're sharing the joy that comes from the love of Jesus Christ. And they had the opportunity to teach the kids that. It shows what the heart of these trips is really all about.
Wow, that's certainly admirable. And the next picture will show you actually didn't play all the time, but you did some work, right?
Yes, there was a lot of work. They taught a lot of lessons from the Bible about the life of Christ, and they also did some much-needed painting on the church where they were able to stay. Polo is a farming community. They just subsist off of the crops that they grow. And the community had suffered for many years from a lot of drought. And this brought a lot of despair to the village in Polo. It just so happened that God brought rain on the day that our kids arrived in Polo.
Almost a miracle, huh?
Yes, and that's exactly what the people in the village of Polo said that it was.
Miracle.
What'd you say, Dr. Arthur?
Excuse me, Sir
Arthur?
Never mind.
Well, let's talk about this a minute. You know, this seems rather admirable and a good thing for these young people to go down and help sacrifice their lives. And what do you think about this sense of good?
First of all, good is a relative term. And what is good to one may not be good to another. It is certainly admirable, says Susan. And the youth are doing what they're doing, but science can't determine the good. Science tells us what is and not what should be.
Oh, that's. I hope you made that point in your book. But, Susan, what do you think about it?
I've got it for my next book, Jeff.
Oh, your next book. Okay.
I can't wait to read that one.
Well, our ghostwriters can help you with that. how do you respond to that, Susan? These kids are at a special place in their lives, these youth?
Yes. Teenagers, especially, working with them, we talk all the time about making choices. It's very important. They're struggling with establishing their identity. They're experimenting with different things to figure out who they are and what they believe in and what their values are. We tell them all the time about making choices, good versus evil, good versus just mediocre, and even good versus plain old selfishness. We want them to have a basis for that. And, you know, I'm sorry, Sir Arthur, but if science cannot help them in establishing the values and making those right choices, then possibly religion has its place?
Well, that's an interesting comment. I think we'll discuss that further as we get along in the program. Thank you, Susan, for sharing with us and for challenging us with your ideas. And thanks for being on the program today.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. God bless you.
God bless you.
And God bless you, sir. Yes, you. May He bless you.
Well, we have another guest for us today, and we wanted to highlight one of these aromas of life called gratitude. A lot of you have heard it coined as the attitude of gratitude, and do you cultivate it? Eric Karampatan, come on and join us on the show today. Religion on the line. How are you? Great to see you. Yeah.
Great to see you.
This is Sir Arthur.
Oh, Sir Arthur, it's nice to meet you.
He's our esteemed scientist who came to share with us today about his new book.
That's fantastic.
It's called Science, the Salvation of Humankind and the Myth of Religion.
That's wonderful. I love science. I can't say I love all your theories, but it's great to meet you.
Yeah. So, Eric, I understand you've got a singing career, and tell us a little bit about how that got started, and I also understand you're a voice teacher, too. Right?
Yes, I am. I'm all of those things. It's great to see everybody here in Oklahoma. I just flew in from St. Louis, Missouri. I was visiting family down in Springfield, Missouri, and singing at a bunch of big churches down there and singing for revival. So it's really fun to use my gifts for the Lord, so it's really been a great trip, too, and it's great to be here. But I am, like you said, I'm a professional musician. I am a union musician. I teach privately at California Baptist University, as well as in a studio in Pasadena. I have sung all over the world. It's kind of amazing, again, what God has done.
Yeah, where was one of the places that you sang overseas?
Well, I've sung in some of the greatest concert halls in Europe as a soloist, and that was amazing, like I said. Great experience for me. And in the Sydney Opera House in Sydney, Australia, in China, at the Shanghai Grand Theater, just to name a few.
Well, if you bring back any videos, you have to come and show us.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I understand you brought a song that you'd like to share with us today, and we'd love to have you share that.
You know, I did bring a song. It's called I Walked a Day Where Jesus Walked. I sang this at a small church, but it was a big revival in the town that I'm from, Mansfield, Missouri, just 2 weeks ago, actually. And again, it is it's a piece that's very dear to me because of what it says. It was written in 1937 by Jeffrey O'Hara. I walk today where Jesus walked.
Lord.
That was just wonderful. Sit down with us for a few minutes. We're kind of basking in the warmth and the fervor of your singing that song. Tell us something about what that song means to you, obviously.
That song is huge for me because there's an old saying that says you can't really understand someone's position in life or their stance on a subject unless you've walked in their footsteps. That piece suggests just that. I mean, we have to walk in Jesus' footsteps. Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior, and I can't apologize for that. And it's something that I have to choose daily. It's a walk that's not easy, and it's not celebrated by a lot of people or a lot of society. But it's something that when you choose it daily, it fills you.
And it fills you. You were talking to me before the show. It fills you with this sense of gratitude too. How does that come about? I mean, was that something from your birth or DNA that just automatically welled up in you, this sense of gratitude?
You know, like the Christian walk that I was speaking of, gratitude is something that you have to choose daily. It's easy to become bogged down in negativity. It's easy to choose to see the difficult things in life and complain about those kind of things often. So again, it's something that you have to choose daily, but when we step back and look at it, we have so much. And I know that I have so much. That piece, again, is very important to me because my voice teacher at Azusa Pacific University, where I graduated, it's a Christian school. I wanted that when I moved to California to study. I wanted a teacher that was a believer. I wanted someone that could encourage me in my walk. She gave that piece to me in a very difficult time. It was my senior year of college. I had about 18 jobs, as usual, and I was teaching several students, uh-huh. And singing in the operas downtown and in Santa Barbara in the morning.
How
for the.
All this fitted in?
Well, I prayed a lot. I said, God, why am I so crazy to accept all these things that you've been giving me? And then I realized, well, okay, you're giving me these things for a reason. And I can do all things through you. So, again, that song, walking in someone's shoes, walking in Christ's shoes, my teacher gave that to me in that time because she had sung it all over the world in musical evangelism. And she said it had helped her walk, and it has just infused my life with so much joy. I mean, the idea of living in gratitude toward what Jesus did for us, it's huge. It's huge.
What do you think, Sir Arthur, about this gratitude? You know, where do you think it comes from, or how do people experience that kind of attitude?
Well, we don't know yet. You know, science needs to work on it more. But eventually it'll show that we don't need that mythical God to learn how to be grateful.
So what you're kind of alluding to is that maybe in the future we'll have this gratitude pill, you know? so you can just pop this pill and it'll change your DNA or maybe your brain centers and just make you be this kind of person? But what do you think about that? I mean, we don't have the pill now. All we have is, like Eric said, this source of religion.
Well, religion certainly appears to be one source, at least for Eric. And thank you, Eric, for that beautiful song, however. I'm sure you believe all of that.
Absolutely. I live by it daily. I'm so glad I could share it with you.
Thank you.
Well, Eric, we really appreciate you being on the show tonight and today at Oklahoma here. You came over from St. Louis. Where
Absolutely.
Are you going next?
I will be going back to California.
California?
Absolutely.
That's your home base, I guess?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I sing a lot with the operas, like I said, downtown and Opera Santa Barbara, Long Beach. So we start rehearsals coming up soon. You know, it is dangerous there, and it goes back to me saying I wanted a Christian school because it felt nice and comfy because that's what I grew up with. But with Christ on my side, I can do anything. I truly believe that.
Wow.
So I don't know that there's a theory that goes along with that, sir, but it's just something that is so ingrained in me.
Well, it's wonderful that you
came tonight
to the show today and shared with us, Eric. And God bless you. And
well, thank you, sir.
Singing, and let us know where you're singing next, and we'll tell our audience.
Your beautiful song. Absolutely. Nice to meet you.
Well, we have a couple other guests here today. And Thank you for being such an attentive audience. You're great. I hope this is tracking with some of you, this topic. You know, we have another young lady, Alicia Richardson, who's going to come and share with us. She's another singer, and Alicia has a story about this kind of thing, sensing the miracles in life. Hi, welcome. How are you, Alicia?
Thank you for having me.
This is Sir Arthur Einstein. We are a wonderful scientific guest today. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for having me.
You're well. That's great. Yeah. Well, tell us something about how to understand, even before you spoke, you were singing. Is that true?
Yeah. It said that I sang my ABCs at 9 months old. So singing before talking and walking, pretty much.
Wow.
And I grew up in a very musical family. Lots of artists, dancers, actors.
So I
musicians.
Guess as Sir Arthur would say it was kind of in your DNA. All this.
Yeah, music. You could say it was in my DNA a little bit. Sure.
Yeah, and then so you went on singing, continued to sing as a child and a teenager? Or you were...
I did. I performed a lot. I started performing professionally when I was a kid, and then
really?
Doing professional theater at like 12, 13 years old. And it was really wonderful. I then went to Interlochen Arts Academy, which is a performing arts high school.
Where is
Huge
Interlochen?
Blessing. That's in Interlochen, Michigan. It sounds like Europe, but it actually is in Michigan. So.
And that's a famous place, I take it, for,
it is.
For
it's,
musicians?
Yeah, it's a famous high school for
famous
the arts.
High school. So you were really privileged, and you were on the way. Your career was on the way by going to Interlochen.
Yeah, it was wonderful. But right about then, you know, I started hitting some roadblocks. I had some kind of dark times all the way through kind of the edge of my teenage years all the way up through my late 20s.
Oh, really?
So,
What was the first bump in the road? I understand you were telling me the bump in the road was when you finished high school and then you were trying to figure, where do I go next?
Yeah, the first bump in the road for me was college. I had received a lot of wonderful acceptance letters from different schools, and they had all promised me financial aid, and then kind of at the last minute, they all said, no, we can give you partial scholarships, and I really didn't know what I was going to do. I had no idea. And within 2 hours of kind of the final call from UC Irvine, actually, CalArts called and offered me a full-ride scholarship, so I can... Yeah, full
really?
Ride with
full
living
ride
expenses.
For 4 years?
For 4 years.
Full ride for 4 years.
Yeah, so for me, that was miraculous. That was something that was just so... such a godsend. I really felt like God was intervening and just put his hand on that situation and said, you're going to school.
Oh,
absolutely.
Miracles.
Oh, come on.
Again, a myth using to explain mere coincidence and happenstance. We could figure out the probabilities if you'd like.
Can you honestly tell me, Sir Arthur, that you believe that? I mean, where is the joy? Where is the reverence and the awe of life? I mean...
I already told you I can't measure joy.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, what was the next bump? You said you had a couple of bumps in your life. You got out of CalArts. You're ready to go on to stardom. And what happened?
I went through a really dark period where I had chronic laryngitis for 7 years. And so I couldn't sing for 7 years. And I developed, I would audition and sing and perform on swollen vocal cords for the first year of it, and that created even more inflammation and laryngitis. So I lost my voice, was not able to sing consistently, and I really believed in my heart that it was over. I really had come to surrender to not being able to sing ever again.
I imagine you were still had voice teachers or coaches. What did they say?
My teacher at the time told me I needed to give it up because it wasn't consistent enough to audition.
Wow.
Yeah.
How disappointing after you put all this.
I suppose it was 7 years, one for each of the year or days of creation. Huh?
Yeah. So that's a great
miracle.
Yeah.
Well, what happened next? I mean, obviously, you just came off of Stages, right? Tell us about that show.
Stages is a show that I wrote with four friends of mine who are all women in the arts. They're all actresses, singers, and dancers. And we take five stages of our lives, and we go through the process of, from the time we were little kids all the way up till now, of what we went through, good and bad. Everything. And we weave in our stories together.
Yeah, where is your next show?
Oh, I get a shameless plug. Okay. It's in North Hollywood, and it's in November.
Hollywood, that's out in California. Right?
That's in California,
not
yes.
Not here in Oklahoma.
No, I don't think there's a Hollywood in Oklahoma, but I could be wrong. I don't know.
North Hollywood in the valley, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But you're not a Valley girl. You're from where?
I'm from Bakersfield, California. So I'm basically Southern. So yeah.
You're really country western. Yeah. Well, all of a sudden you get to this position where you're singing in a show and
right.
you're creating the show. And mm-hmm. my wife and I, we saw it.
You saw. Thank you for coming out all the way to California to see my show.
Yeah. Well, our show moves around. You know, we come to different places. But what happened next that got you back into singing?
I was working just a normal day like anything else, and my voice did start to slowly come back at the edge of that seven-year period, and I was having a conversation with God, and it was kind of lengthy. It was about 10 minutes, and we were kind of going back and forth, he and I was saying, you know, if you want me to be a musician, if you want me to sing, just give me a sign. I'll take anything I can get. And I walked from the back of the store to the front, and I instantly, and I mean within 10, 15 seconds, ran into Randy Wallingford. And he's a pastor.
He was a pastor?
He's a pastor. And his son was taking Taekwondo next door. And he said, how are you doing? He had seen all of my operas and all of my shows back when I was at CalArts and after that at Long Beach Opera. And he said, what are you doing? Would you like the soprano solo position at my church? And I said, yes, absolutely. So that for me was my sign. Gives me chills to the day. And it was a beautiful moment. It was one of those moments that I had suffered for so long in my own mind, and I know everyone else has their own walk, and it's way worse than what I went through. But I really identified my voice. That was for me what God gave me. God gave me this voice, and then it was gone. So I really had a hard time figuring out why that was happening. And when I got that sign from him, it all made sense, that he's always there, even when you're so depressed and so down, and you can't figure it out.
So there were these kind of touchstones or turning points.
Little miracle points.
In your life. What do you think about that?
Oh, here we go again. Explaining life happenings with a myth. Read my book and get educated. In fact, that goes for all the rest of you, too, for that matter. Look, Alicia, it's not up to miracles. In the large scheme of life, they do not matter. We're just evolving from the hot Big Bang to the frozen universe that finally burns out. You know, kind of cheery, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you're a ray of sunshine. Yes.
I bet you and your husband would like to invite Sir Arthur over. It'd be real chilling.
You know, you should do that. We could come over. We could sing. Come over with me and Mike, and we'll invite Eric over. We live in California, you know. Come over. We could sing, and we could talk, and maybe open up your paradigm a little bit to something bigger. And, you know,
we could even raise money for Tana.
We could raise money for charity. We could.
Yeah. Well, we love your story, and you really had a good interaction with our guest, Sir Arthur, here. And but we'll leave the social arrangements. You can make those after the show.
All right.
Thanks for being with us.
Thanks
for
having us. Thank you.
Well, Sir Arthur, you know, another awe of life is right there over the side of the Joy family. I don't think I need to tell you who's in the picture. You're from Cambridge. You know who's in the picture. They're the royal family. So what do you think about Joy?
Oh, yeah. I remember C.S. Lewis wrote a book, Surprised by Joy. He used joy to describe his conversion to Christianity.
So do you think joy can be a spiritual thing or a religious feeling?
Well, once again, we really don't deal in feelings. We deal in facts. Science will probably show that joy is something embedded in the genes or in the brain. It's automatic, you know, probably developed over our evolutionary history as a mechanism to tell us when we did something well so that in the future we would choose again to do something well.
Well, that sounds pretty mechanistic, I think, doesn't it? Seems to take the joy out of joy.
Mm.
Well, we have another guest with us, Elise Stout. She's going to come up to us, and she has another song to share with us. Elise is a friend of ours, and when we were talking about coming on the show, we were talking about the sense of joy and the sense of going home or being home. Welcome, Elise. Let's give her a hand. Hi, if there are on site. Yeah.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here in Oklahoma City. Both of my parents were from Oklahoma, but I'm a California girl. My, this is a short mic. I guess I won't sit on your lap. Okay.
Well, you know, I know you've had a career that's since you were a teenager. Where did you start singing?
Well, I actually started singing in a church when I was six. So, but I've been singing all over the world throughout most of my life. So
where are some of the places around the world?
Well, Carnegie Hall, for one. That's probably one that most people would recognize.
Really?
Yes, Philadelphia Academy of Music, and I sung at some of the most beautiful halls all over the world. So
you sang in Europe, I understand? And also,
I sang in many of the great cathedrals in Europe.
And you went to Japan. I mean, what was it like to sing in Japanese?
Oh, well, I love singing in Japanese.
You really do?
I love speaking in Japanese. What little I speak, but yeah, I love going. I'm going to be going again this year.
Oh, you are? Mm-hmm. Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
So you have this special song you want to sing with for us, Going Home.
I do. I'd like to just talk a little bit about it, what the song means to me, because I understand I have not read your book yet, but I'm looking very forward to it. So I love a great debate. But it means a lot to me because going home, as you will hear in the lyrics, it sounds like the lyrics were written originally as a spiritual. The original tune is from Dvorak's New World Symphony. It's the largo section. And then lyrics were given to it in, I believe, the 1930s by Mr. Fischer. So
Mr. Fischer, I understand, was a student of Dvorak.
Yes, exactly. So it means a lot to me because I was actually adopted. I was illegally adopted. I was given away to my parents that were from Oklahoma. And I, even though I didn't know I was adopted, I always had this sense of never feeling like I was truly part of that family. I know that they loved me and they cared for me and they gave me as much as they could, but I never felt a sense of home. So I first sang this piece when I was 17 years old at another young girl's service, a funeral service for a 17-year-old. And I remember singing it, and I remember weeping after the funeral because I thought, that could be me. We're the same age. Mm.
And so, come and share the song.
Okay, let me share it with you.
It's not fun.
obviously that's a wonderful tune from Dvorak's symphony and the wonderful words. What does that mean to you, the song?
Well, again, as I was explaining before I got up to sing, I never really felt like I had a home. I always felt very different and very outcast, and just being an artist in a family of really poor farmers with very little education. But I was lucky in one thing, that they saw something in me and they decided to let me go with that. So they gave me music. They let me have piano lessons. They let me go on. And I think that showed, they tried to make me feel as warm and welcome as they could. And finally, at the age of 17, they did let me know that I was adopted. So all of the things and the fears that I'd had were, at least I felt relieved because I knew. And so it was from that point on. I'm quite much older now, as you could tell. But I've grown in Christ over the years. And I think the last 7 years have been the real defining moments for me, where I know that Christ is alive, that God is alive, that He's real in not only my life but other people's lives, because I have had a very difficult life, and I'm sure many of you have also.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound like you have, Sir Arthur, but but God has given me His refuge, His home.
Yeah. So what do you have to say about this sense of, the spiritual sense of home?
Well, I can't deny that a beautiful lyric, beautiful voice, melody, but it's unreal to get our hopes up just because of words and music in a song.
Well, I think what you need to understand, Sir Arthur, is that these words mean something to me. They're a reality to me, and I'm sure that they're a reality to many of these people out here, or they wouldn't be the studio audience for this show. So I think that these are intangible things. These are things that you have to think about. Even being a scientist, it's like, what gives the quality of life? You know, there's hope, and there's forgiveness, and there's gratitude, and there's all of these things that science can't explain.
Yeah, what do you have to say about that? I mean, she says you can't explain this stuff?
Well, we're working on it, and if you can't explain it, then why do you need it?
It's what got me to where I am. It's right. Why I'm alive. Right. Not the Crab Nebula or whatever that was on the screen.
More myth, more. Well, at least science can offer hope that there may be other planets and intelligent life that can communicate. That gives us hope.
Well, yeah, maybe that's your hope, but you know, that next.
I feel planet, sorry for you, actually.
The next planet is 1,700 light years away. We'll never get there. So it's kind of like joy without joy and hope without hope. Elise, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
And sharing with us. Let's give her a hand.
Thank you.
Well, there are a couple of verses I wanted to share with you, Sir Arthur, from the Bible. Just we've heard some people talking about religion. I know maybe you feel like we're trying to convert you, but really we're just trying to have a civil discussion when there's so little civil discussion. You know, here's one. Jesus was saying to Satan, so I don't know if you're familiar with the story, but
yeah,
anyway.
It's a myth, yeah.
It's yeah, a I know you regard it as a myth, but anyway, the story says the devil said, "Why don't you turn these stones into bread since you're hungry? You're out here in the wilderness fasting for 40 days, and you have the power since you are the Son of God." And Jesus says, "Man does not live on bread alone, but every word that comes from the mouth of God." And then there was other words. In fact, Jesus was actually quoting Moses, another tremendous figure in Western civilization. "The Lord humbled you to teach you that man does not live on bread alone, but every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord." You know, what do you think of that?
Well, Moses and Jesus were important in the history of Western civilization, but remember, they lived before the day of modern science and all the truth that we found out.
Well, that may be true, but let's look at the next slide here. I kind of rewrote this. "Man does not live on science alone, but also in every word that comes from the mouth of God."
Oh, gosh, how can this happen? Science and religion are incompatible.
Well, maybe they aren't incompatible, Sir Arthur. Maybe there's some way to conjoin the two. I mean, we have benefits of science and we have the benefits of religion, and we'll sure to enjoy reading your book and seeing what you have to say in your next book. So,
well, Jack, there you go again. You're trying to convert me again.
Well, we're just trying to have a civil discussion on the issue, so you think you can relax about that. But thanks a lot for being on the show. Let's give Sir Arthur a hand. And that completes our show today. Thank you for being our wonderful audience. We want to thank our wonderful pianist, Jeff Rizzo. We want to thank Billy Gilbert, our announcer, Ian Fletcher, and all the wonderful guests. Thank you very much. We'll see you next time.